Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Kabbalah and Coffee. This book that we're studying is called The Art of Giving. But before we get to The Art of Giving, I want to share with you a related insight from a book called Torah Ar, which is a compilation of discourses authored by the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, who was the founder of the Chabad Hasidic movement. He was born in 1745 and he passed away in 1812. And he was just a very, very powerful and powerful tzaddik and a mystic. So we've studied the Alter Rebbe's teachings before. The Alter Rebbe is the author of Tanya, which is one of the most well-known and the most brilliant Kabbalistic works, personal Kabbalistic works ever written. And this is a book of discourses, of Hasidic texts, of mystical texts that are organized by the Torah sections. It goes through each Torah portion from the beginning to the end throughout the five books, and it shares discourses and insights into the Torah portion. I want to begin by sharing with you an insight that was applicable to yesterday's Torah portion, the portion that was read in synagogues around the world, the Torah portion of Yisra, which talks about the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai and when God spoke the Ten Commandments. So it's the Sinai experience, the Ten Commandments, divine revelation on the mountain, all of that happened in yesterday's Torah portion. And there is an incredible insight that I'm going to share with you in a moment that has to do with fire, which is why I have our fire equipment here, which should work. Okay, we have multiple options for this. I'm going to show you something that is absolutely mind-blowing when it comes to fire, something that perhaps you've never seen before. You may have seen it before, but I venture to, perhaps, you've never seen this before. It's written in the discourse, and it's something amazing about the physical properties of fire and how it works. And it's related to the spiritual properties of fire, and therefore I need to give one other quick introduction, and that is that everything that exists physically, say the Kabbalists, has a spiritual source. You cannot have something that exists in the physical world that doesn't have a spiritual source, because it can't come from nothing. Nothing originates from itself, and nothing comes from nowhere. I know that's like double, like quadruple negatives there, right? But there is nothing in existence that comes from nothing and nowhere. Everything has a spiritual source. And in its source, you can see the essential properties at work, and it's an amazing thing. Everything has a nature. Everything does certain things. And science will ask the question, how does it work? Kabbalah will ask the question, why does it work? And it's a different question. You see, science will tell you that the boiling point of water is 212 degrees. Because that's the nature of water. The nature of H2O is that when you heat it to 212 degrees, it boils. But why? Oh, because the molecular structure heats up at that point, it changes or whatever it is, and it turns. But why? Because based on its structure, that's the nature of the structure. Why? So the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya that nature is a word that we use when we don't have an answer for something. It's an escape hatch. When you get stuck somewhere and you can't explain why. So you say, oh, because that's its nature. That's the natural properties of this thing. That's how it works. So we're going to look at fire today. Literally, we're going to look at fire today. And discover not so much the how of fire, but the why of fire. And explore why it does what it does. So in yesterday's Torah portion, right after the giving of the Ten Commandments, after God speaks the Ten Commandments, the Torah says as follows. So I'm reading to you from chapter 20 of the book of Exodus, verse number 15. So it says like this: V'chol ha'am, and the entire nation, ro'im et hakolot, they heard the sounds. Ve'et ha'lapidim, sorry, they saw the sounds. Ve'et ha'lapidim, and they saw the torches. Ve'et kol ha'shofar, and they saw the sound of the shofar blast. So you were very accurate prescient in talking about shofars. Ve'et ha'har ashen. And they saw the mountain smoking. They saw the smoking mountain.
Camels.
Not camels. It wasn't that type of smoking. It was the smoky mountains. It wasn't that either. It was a mountain that was smoking.
So everything is upside
down. So everything is like, things are happening. So they're seeing the sounds. They're seeing torches. Okay, that makes sense. They're seeing this, the shofar sound, and they're seeing a mountain smoking. All of these are discussed at length in Kabbalah. What's the nature of these miracles and what does it mean? But I want to focus on the idea of the mountain that is smoking. So the Alter Rebbe addresses this in Torah Ar, in this book that I referenced a little bit earlier. And he asks the question, what does it mean that the mountain is smoking? Again, this is what the book looks like, for those of you here. Huh? Unfiltered? Yeah. What is it? Newport, Truly Alive? What was their thing? Okay. So here we go. I don't think this has ever been translated. I'll read the original of this mystical text, and I'll translate as I go along. It's just a few lines. So he says, Ve'esahar Ashen, they saw the mountain that was smoking. So he explains, Hine Ashen, so smoke, Hu Ayedeshen Nechaz Ha'ar B'davar Gashmi, smoke is produced when fire takes hold of a physical substance, Sheyesh ba yisoid ha'afer, that has in it the element of earth or of dust. So let me explain. Kabbalah teaches, and this is also in various ancient philosophical works as well as Jewish philosophy, that everything is comprised of four elements. Esh, Ruach, Mayim, and Afer. Fire, wind. You know that band, Earth, Wind, Earth, Wind, and Fire? So there's another element, which is water, but I guess they only had three members of the band. Was it a three-member?
They had a big backup.
Okay, listen, what do I know? But according to Kabbalah, there's Esh, Ruach, Mayim, and Afar, fire, wind, Mayim, water, and Afar, and earth. Those are the four elements. So what happened, and everything is a composite of that. So some have more of one and less of the other. Fire obviously is heavy on the fire and less, it has a little bit of oxygen in the fire as well. And fire that's holding onto a wick certainly has a substantive element as well. And there's also moisture in it. So there's water, but things are shaded. It's like, you ever see like when you have a color map and you can kind of fine tune the colors and you can bump up the red or bump up the yellow or bump up the blue. That's what? Oh, well, whatever. But you can, theoretically, right? You can bump up different colors. So you have everything in existence is comprised of these four elements. And yet, they're more weighted to one or the other. So the Alter Rebbe says like this. A substance, any given substance, let's say a piece of paper. A piece of paper has in it the element of fire. I don't know how it has a fire element, but it has a certain element of fire. Ruach, it has a certain element of wind. Mayim, it has a certain moisture element of water. And it has Afar, it has a substantive, like an earthy, it doesn't have to come from the earth necessarily, but it has a certain earthliness, a heaviness to it, a substance to it. When you put fire to the paper, it will burn and it will emit smoke. What is producing the smoke? It is coming from the Afar, it's coming from the earth of the substance itself. So again, he says, Ashen, smoke is produced when fire catches on something physical that has in it, the Yisoid HaAfer, that has in it this earthly element. So then he jumps straight into the spiritual analog and listen to this. V'kach al-derech mashal, he says the same thing is true by way of analogy. His habchus, nefesh habahamis, sheminoiga l'sirch d'kedusha, nikra b'shem Ashen. When you transform your animal soul, when you take your inner animal desires that are not evil, but are what we call on a neutral level. In other words, it exists. So these are desires that are physical desires, they're not spiritual desires. They're physical desires that are not evil, but they're not holy either, like the desire to eat. is not in and of itself a holy desire, and it's not in and of itself a negative desire. It's just a bodily desire. So when a person takes their animal or natural soul and transforms it, l'sitra d'kedusha, to the side of holiness, nikra b'shem ashen, it is called burning. It's called burning it and smoking it. Let's explain. What happens when you burn something? The thing is becoming consumed in the fire. It's becoming consumed and it's becoming converted, if you will, from a solid to something more ethereal. You're releasing its energy. Right? You burn it up, it disintegrates, it loses its structure. It was a piece of paper with length and width and the whole thing, and now you've reduced it, you've burned it down, and you've released it, and some element of it is now rising up from the ashes. That's the smoke. Spiritually speaking, what is producing smoke? What does it mean? What is this burning that is producing smoke? It's taking one's inner animal desires or inner neutral physical bodily desires and transforming it, in a sense, having it be consumed for something holy and godly. So if we take our natural desire to eat and we transform it into a desire to eat for a holy cause, and let me explain what that means. Instead of just eating because I'm hungry, I eat mindfully and thoughtfully. I'm eating not because my body says, feed me, but because my soul has a mission on this earth. And the soul's mission is to do more mitzvot. And I can't do mitzvot without a body, because a soul without a body can't do anything. A soul without a body can't give charity, can't help, can't wrap tefillin, can't light Shabbat candles. So I need a body, and in order to have my soul coexisting with my body or combining with my body, co-joining with my body, I need to feed my body with food, because food is this magic glue that brings together body and soul in this incredible union that we call life itself. So when I meditate upon that, I am transforming my inner desire, my animal soul's desire to eat, into what could potentially be a holy experience. And now, that is called burning or consuming the materialism of the experience into something greater than itself, which is producing, in a spiritual level, smoke. You with me so far? Sort of makes sense? Okay, here's where it gets cool. Then he continues. V'teva ha'ashen, he gets back to the physical properties of smoke. The nature of smoke, sha'ola, which is going up, is kishemiskarev la'esh, when it gets close to fire, madlik, it becomes kindled. Listen to this. The smoke catches on fire. Listen. Uma'achiz es ha'esh, and it grabs the fire, the smoke does. B'davar sha'ashen yotze mimenu, and it grabs hold, the smoke holds the fire and draws it back to the thing that is producing the smoke in the first place. Do you understand what's happening here? When you burn something and smoke is emanating from it, let's say that thing is out and all that's left is the smoke. If you have fire above it, the smoke itself will catch on fire, sort of, and draw that fire back down to what was originally on fire. I'm going to show you what this means.
You said sort of.
Huh?
You said sort of, so that threw me off.
Oh, I'm not sure. Maybe.
It's on fire, sort of.
So it catches, this will be clear when I demonstrate this in real time. So what I'm doing right now is lighting a candle on fire. This is a standard candle. This is not a magic trick. This is just straight up what goes on. And I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do before I do it so that you can watch for it. We'll do it multiple times. It's never gets old. We're going to... No.
For your
children
listening, do not play with magic.
Do not play, do not play with fire at home, etc. Now, the fire is burning. What I'm going to do is I'm going to blow out the fire and smoke will be coming out of it. What I'm going to do then is hold this fire above it. And you'll see that from a distance, the candle will rekindle through the smoke. Yes?
Yeah, because there's a line of carbon.
Because the smoke itself is drawing it down, which is what the Alter Rebbe here is saying. Again, the Alter Rebbe is saying when smoke is going up from something that has been burned, and it becomes in close proximity to fire, the smoke itself draws the fire back down to the original substance that was burning. Ready? Yeah. It's hard because I looked, my eyes are that way and maybe it was this way. Okay. I'm going to get this lid and ready. You saw that?
Yes.
Yes? Yeah. I don't think you saw that. We do it again. You see that?
Yeah.
I wish we could slow it down.
I think we have to take a video.
This is, we can have video accompanying the podcast, which is great. Do you know what we get about 1,000 listens a day on the podcast? Legit. And all these people will be like, what is he doing with the thing? Right, look at that.
Mom is very busy.
Good stuff. Play it again, Sam. All right, we're going to do this with another candle. I like this one. It's a nice, glowy candle. No. Oh, meh. It kind of, sort of. No, because it didn't, I don't think it was, it didn't smoke. Right, because... It wasn't lit long enough. This one is lit long enough.
It has the walls, too.
No, this last night was working really well.
Oh.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I should have lit it from the beginning of the class. It's going to work. It's going to happen. We're doing it again.
Get pyrotechnic ready.
Yeah.
You see that? How cool is that? Seriously. I'm going to read it. I'm going to do it 4 times. There you go. All right, so I'm going to read it again. He says like this, V'tav ha'ashen, the nature of smoke, she'ola, that's going up, right? The smoke that goes up. Kishe miskarev la'esh, when it gets close to fire, madlik, it gets kindled, u'ma'achiz ha'ar, it lights, and it draws back down the fire, b'davar she'ashen yotze mimenu, to the thing from where the smoke is originating. It's exactly what's happening. Now, you could study this in yeshiva without candles and props and be like, what's it saying? Fire and smoke, something mystical. It's not mystical. Well, it's also mystical, but it's very practical. It's a very pragmatic fire trick. Let's put it out now. Oh, look at that. Can't get rid of this thing. It's like a trick candle. Okay, that would be cool if I could get that. But
it's physics to me.
It's totally physics. But it's physics and
carbon.
Are you sacrificing the lesson? Are you, Steve? Are you sacrificing the lesson? Carbon. Carbon. Oh my. Okay.
It's
yeah. Oh. Don't get incensed. Now, check this out, Ed.
Good morning.
Just for you. Hey, check this out. It's a visual. I'm gonna put out this fire. And as the smoke billows up, we're going to rekindle the fire through this light that's not touching the wick. Right?
All right.
Can't be done, you say. It's hard to see, but it worked.
Yeah, turn the candle around.
This way?
Yeah, there you go, because it's lower.
Magic. Right? It's my jack-o'-lantern. Folks, this is it. So what's the point? What's the message here? So he continues. So he says, so too, when the smoke, when the mountain is smoking, it draws down the voices and the torches. It's the idea of running and returning the Sitra Kedusha in the holy side, as is explained before. All of this is cryptic, and let me explain what it means and what this whole physical analogy of fire is teaching us. Kabbalah speaks very often about the process of rise and return. And that is that what we do below has an effect above, which in turn brings down, so to speak, energy from above back below. The easiest example we can give is the example that's the farthest away from fire itself, and that is water. Think about what you learned back in the day in school, what you learn in science class about water, about the water table and how the whole water cycle works. So you have lakes and oceans, which are deposits of water, and then the sun heats up these lakes and oceans. What happens to the water? What's the word? Evaporation, right? It evaporates. The water evaporates. And then what happens? What's the next word? Evaporation. Condensation, right? And that forms clouds. It's condensing. And then what happens? Precipitation. You with me?
Yeah.
Evaporation, condensation, precipitation. It was either rabbinics for me or science teacher. Okay, so we have evaporation, condensation, and precipitation. The water, so therefore, when it rains, where is that water coming from? Where is it really coming from?
The lake.
In other words, you get what you give. Right? Whatever it is that we, that the earth releases above is what comes back, which is why if our lakes and oceans and rivers are toxic, if we pump them with toxic chemicals, so it produces a phenomenon called acid rain. Acidic rain, not Hasidic rain. That's something else. That's when the Chassidim make a rain. That's something totally different. Acid rain is rain that is produced from tainted, if you will, bodies of water that are straight up polluted and dangerous. And that comes back to us. So if we take care of our water system, so then what comes back is clean and healthy water. If we don't take care of this stuff, then what comes back to us is unhealthy precipitation. So in the language of the mystics, this is called Isarusa de la Sata and Isarusa de la Ela. There is what is called an awakening from below, where again, it's not limited to the lakes and the oceans and water, but it's what we do. Let's talk about human beings. It's what we produce. It's what we put forth that goes up, so to speak, that rises to the spiritual realms, which in turn triggers a commensurate, a mida keneged mida, a commensurate spiritual reaction. So our actions produce spiritual reactions, which then in turn come back down to us. Kind of like the fire. So the smoke that we produce goes up. It hits the fire of above, the divine fire, if you will. And what happens? It reignites down below. You with me on that? Say it again. When we consume ourselves, of course, what does that mean, consume ourselves? When we, like we said before, the idea of burning and smoke, inner smoke, means that we're sublimating, that we're somehow lessening the natural materialistic drives and desires of the animal soul. So when we burn the animal soul, if you will, that produces smoke, that releases some sort of energy above, that produces smoke. That goes up, again, metaphorically, that goes up to the supernal divine fire. And what happens then is that that fire triggers a reaction down below, that the fire comes back down below to inspire us. So when we serve God, that goes up, and then we in turn get more inspired, and it's a cycle that repeats itself. So we're inspired to act. God gives us back additional inspiration, so we do more mitzvot, and that's a cycle that repeats itself. Does this make sense? Yes? This is a truth in Kabbalah that you find in many different places, explained in many different ways. Today we use this fire, smoke analogy. Many different ways that you can explain it. There's the water analogy. There's that I explained before about the precipitation. There's the condensation and evaporation. There's the fire example that we've been describing. No matter how you explain it, it's the same truth. There's the language of Kabbalah, Ratz v'Shuv, running and returning. It's like a rubber band, tension and resolution, right? You're pulling and then it comes back. All of it tells us that when we convert if you will, ourself into something a little bit more majestic. When we take our natural desires, our natural proclivities, our natural inclinations, and make them a little bit more refined, a little bit holier, when we do that, what happens is it goes above and it brings down some greater light and blessing to us below. That's the cycle.
It's mandatory, too.
It's mandatory.
Isn't it, right? That God has to respond. If your God makes
a decision. Yeah. Well, it's part of what we would call, again, using the word that I mentioned before, it's part of the natural fabric of the universe. In other words, just like the smoke here and the fire, it doesn't have a choice whether or not the fire is going to come back and rekindle the candle. It will, as long as there's a column of smoke with enough density, and as long as there's a fire above, it will go back down. It's not like it's going to choose in the moment whether or not... So the divine light is always... The divine fire is always burning. Right? So that's always burning. And it will necessarily, if we produce our own column of smoke above, it will always come back down to us. It's part of the natural fabric of the spiritual universe. Yeah.
Okay, so that's because you're doing something good.
Yes.
It gets better. Yeah. What if we're doing something bad?
So that's why I use the example of the acid rain. If we give off toxic, God forbid, if a person gives off toxic energy, then that comes back down, whether to the person or to the world at large. It's not a good thing. So Kabbalah also speaks of negative forces and dark forces called Klipa and Sitra Achra that come back down to mankind, come back down to the world through our negative choices. So that is also a very real possibility.
The good comes back down from God.
Yes. Judaism does not believe in any forces outside of God. So even that which appears to be negative is also coming from God. Not that God is evil, God forbid, but that the negative, that which appears to be negative, is also coming from God. This is a very sharp contrast with other religions that talk about, other forces and, devil, whatever it is, other things. So Judaism is very strict monotheist, very strictly monotheistic. It's only one source of everything. Now, here's where it gets very interesting. What all of this means is that everything that we're doing is creating, is producing a... Everything that we does has an effect, has a real effect somewhere, and that effect comes back down to us. Right? That's like what we've learned. Everything has an effect, and it comes back down. Now, Kabbalah teaches that the world itself is sustained by a measure of divine light. The world itself is sustained by divine energy. And on a basic level, that energy exists. I'm using my own words here, but it exists on a very low level. In other words, there's a default kind of low level of divine energy that is flowing through the world and through existence. And when I say a low level of divine energy, what I mean is that it's the basic energy that keeps the world going. Kabbalah teaches further that we have the ability through our actions to trigger a greater, more transcendent divine light and energy to come back and infuse the world with something even more magnificent than what it currently has. In other words, I'm trying to think of a good example. Think of, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but think of a birthday party. This is so random. It's the most random example that I can give. So think of a birthday party, which you can have, let's say, a child's birthday party. You can throw a basic birthday party that has the cake and the balloons and whatever. Whatever is the basic standard, if you will, birthday party. And then you can put more cash flow into it and up the birthday party. And you can have, the entertainment come in, the balloon maker, and the clown. I don't know if people still do clowns. I don't know, is that a thing? Whatever. You can have pony rides, and you can have a bounce house, and you can have fire jugglers, and you can have all this sort of thing, right? So the more cash flow that comes in, you've just raised the energy, you've raised the level of the party. Again, that's on a very simple, silly, physical level. Obviously, we're not talking about how much the kid enjoys it or how meaningful it is or whatever it is. On a very basic level, though, on a practical level, so when you have a certain influx of cash, you can produce one level of party. When you have a greater influx, you can have a higher level of a party on a very physical, tangible dimension. So, on a totally different level, our reality, the universe that we live in, is sustained by a certain level of divine energy. A very basic, elementary level of divine energy. Kabbalah teaches, through our positive actions, we can elicit from above, draw down from above, a higher measure of divine energy to infuse the world with a greater power. So if the world's energy exists on a basic level of 5, through our avodah, through our divine service, we can bring into it 8 or 10, something even greater light into our own lives and into the world itself. In the language of our text, and now we're going to soon jump into our text. Please take and pass for those that need a copy. Take and pass. So in the language of our discourse, we're using not 1 through 10, but rather single digits, double digits, triple digits, 4 digits and 5 digits, and let me explain. Single digits, so like let's use the number 1. So 1, basic. 10, higher. 100, even higher. 1,000, even higher. 10,000 is the highest. So figure you have the spiritual energy ammometer. Right? You have this gauge that gauges the spiritual energy. It could be at a 1, it could be at a 10, it could be at 100, it could be at 1,000, and I don't know if I can bend my arms so far, it could be at 10,000, right? It can be 1 through 1,000. It could be in any one of those digit spaces, single, double, triple, quadruple, or quintuple digits. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The higher the number of digits, the higher the energy and divine force that is being unleashed. Where does the... One more thing. We explained the last few weeks that these digits, single, double, triple, etc., they correspond to 5 dimensions within the human being and 5 dimensions within the spiritual realms. What are they? So in the human being, so the single digits correspond to emotion, double digits correspond to the intellect, triple digits correspond to that which transcends intellect, 4 digits correspond to our will, and 5 digits correspond to our deepest desires and pleasures. On a spiritual level, it's the same thing. Single digits correspond to divine emotion, double digits to divine intelligence, triple digits to that which transcends divine intelligence, which is transcendent intelligence. 4 digits corresponds to divine will, and 5 digits correspond to divine pleasure. So the question is, and again, all of these are, imagine, if you will, if you want to think of this spatially, imagine a reality, a realm, or realms beyond our physical universe, and within those realms you have different layers. You have one layer. You know, you ever see these liquid density experiments where you have different liquids of different densities? You have, you know, water, and you have honey and water and other types of liquid densities, and you can almost, if you pour it incorrectly, they form layers, and if you have a glass jar, you can see the layers kind of stack up on top of each other. I think they do that also with drinks. You could have like a layered drink or something. Whatever it is, the bottom line is you could see these layers. So imagine these layers. You have your single digit layer, double digits, triple digits, 4 digits, 5 digits, and you could see these layers of density, if you will, one higher than the next. The lowest is single digits, the highest is 5 digits, and in between are the other layers. The world is sustained. Kabbalah teaches, what is the basic lifeblood of the universe, spiritual lifeblood of the universe? It comes from the energy, it comes from the sphera, comes from the divine attribute of Malchut. Malchut is divine kingship. So just like a human king, a king of flesh and blood, rules by being a king, right? Rules a nation and connects with the nation and gives laws and edicts to the nation. The nation survives by leadership of the king, right? So just like that's a human relationship with a human king and human subjects, so to divine kingship, the attribute of Malchut is the basic lifeblood or energy flow from the divine into our reality. So Kabbalah teaches that the world exists through the energy force of Malchut. Malchut is one of the seven divine emotional attributes, which tells us that the world is, the energy of the world is coming from how many digits? Again, Malchut is a typical energy of flow of the world. Malchut is one of the divine emotional attributes. So which level is the standard flow of the world? One, right? The lowest level of energy are the divine emotional attributes, right? We say emotion, again, ranking from one up to five. We have emotion, intellect, transcendence, will, and pleasure. Those are the five. Those are the five dimensions. Malchut is one of the divine emotional attributes. Malchut is the lifeblood, the basic lifeblood of the universe. So therefore, what we're saying is that the world is sustained on a basic level from the lowest digits, from the single digits, if you will, of divine energy. Make sense? Yes? Sort of? Not really? Okay, to mark up this candle, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? You have different layers. This is all representing different dimensions of spiritual energy. Typically, it's only the lowest part of the divine spiritual reality that flows to give life into the worlds. It's from the lowest dimension. Because the worlds are lowly, the worlds are a physical world. So it's the lowest part of the spiritual reality that goes into the worlds to give it spiritual life. Everything physical is powered by something spiritual. But what powers it? The lowest part of the spiritual is powering the physical. It's like the lowest element of God is powering the world. Not the highest, most transcendent. It's the lowest. It's the basic life that's flowing through it. So it comes from Malchut, which again is one of the divine emotive attributes, and that is flowing into the universe on a level of single digits. We have the ability to bring out from the higher levels of spirituality and to draw those into our universe, into our reality. In other words, we have the ability to suffuse the world with a more powerful energy than it currently has by default. To draw additional light into the universe, light that otherwise would remain in the spiritual realms untapped by us. But we have the ability through our efforts to bring that, to call that forth. How? So we're about to get there. Any questions so far? Because I feel like this is is a pretty technically Kabbalistic section. So any and all questions, please. Fire away.
No pun intended?
Very pun intended.
No, I wasn't even thinking that. That's how good I am.
Regarding Malchut, is there a connection that Malchut is the lowest of the seven?
Yeah, not only is it one of the emotive divine attributes, which is again the lowest. It's not five digits, not four, not three, not two. It's the single digits, but it's the lowest of those divine emotive attributes. Of the seven emotive attributes, it's number seven. So it's almost like by default, you have only like a little stream that's going from the spiritual reality into our world to keep it going, to keep it alive. A very basic, elementary, very simple flow of divine energy into our reality from the lowest point. It's almost like if you were to stack the spiritual reality on top of the physical reality, what would be the interface? What would be the point of connection between the physical reality and the spiritual reality? Well, the uppermost part of the physical reality would touch which part of the spiritual reality? The lowest part. The lowest part. That's what, in a sense, Kabbalistically is flowing into the world. The lowest of the spiritual reality. So there are five dimensions, one greater than the next. But what's actually touching and integrating and flowing into the world? The lowest of the lowest. Single digits, if you will. Again, the single digits is just a way Kabbalistically to kind of mark in our minds the difference between one dimension and the next. So it's 1, 10, 20, sorry, let me try that again. 1, 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000. So we're getting from the lowest dimension and the lowest attribute, the lowest sphere, the lowest malchut of the lowest category. That's what's flowing into the world. By default, until we do something to trigger a greater light from above. It's through our efforts that we can trigger a greater influx of light and energy than what was coming by default. So let's get into the text. And the way we're going to explain it today is that there's something that we can do to call forth from the level of 100, and there's something that we can do to call forth from the level of 10,000. So through our efforts, we instead of having single digits, we can have triple digits and even five, all the way, drawing from the top all the way down into the world. Take a look at page 40. Take a look at page 40. By the way, it's not going to be any clearer in the text itself. So I'm hoping that what I'm saying is making a little bit of sense. And again, I think on a very basic level, what you need to understand is we're just talking about degrees of spirituality and what dimension of the spiritual is by default coming into our existence, and what higher level of spiritual reality can we call forth through our actions in calling that forth. That's what it is. And the different digits are different amounts. So like, if you have a check for $1, it's a low amount. If you have a check for $10,000, it's a much greater amount. Right? So if it's 1 or 10 or 100, or 1,000, or 10,000, we're talking about greater degrees of spiritual force. So we're typically getting, the world is typically being infused and sustained by the lowest, by just the single digits, by just the one, if you will, Malchut. But we can, through our avodah, through our spiritual service, we can call forth from a higher dimension, three digits, even five digits, all the way from the top. So let's pick it up on page number 40. And what we're doing here is we're correlating all of this to how the Torah describes the lifespan of our matriarch, Sarah. Sarah is part of the first Jewish couple, right? It was Abraham and Sarah. They were the first Jewish couple. So husband is Abraham, wife is Sarah. Sarah passes away before her husband, before Abraham. Abraham lived 175 years, I want to say. He lived a long time. Sarah lived 127 years. The Torah tells us, when talking about her death, it says that she lived, it enumerates her life, it says she lived 100 years, she lived 20 years, and she lived 7 years. Triple digits, double digits, single digits. Doesn't say she lived 127 years, which would be the normal way of saying it, the way typically it would be said, but no. It says she lived, her lifespan was 100 year, singular, 100 year, 20 year, and then 7 years. So what does it mean Kabbalistically? So here we go. We're about to jump into this. Page 40, mystical verse. Page 40, second paragraph. To return to the mystical interpretation of the verse And the verse states, the life of Sarah was 100 years, etc. So before we get into the 127, we're going to talk about the spiritual meaning, the mystical, the Kabbalistic meaning of the name Sarah, Sarah. What does Sarah mean Kabbalistically? 3rd paragraph, page 40. Sarah, whose name denotes rulership. Sarah means Sarara, he says. Sarah is related to the word Sarara, like a sar. A sar is an officer, a minister, a ruler, someone with power. So Sarah connotes, designates, refers to the idea of rulership. That which has power, that which has dominion, that which is in control. Symbolizes the level of, and here we have a mystical term, of matronita.
Matronita.
What is matronita? It sounds kind of like matriarch, doesn't it? Matronita. Matronita sounds almost like matriarch. Matronita is the Kabbalistic word of the feminine energy that is, that has a power to it. Okay? So this, and Matronita is, after the little dash there, the Zohar's term, Kabbalah's term, for the attribute of Malchut. Malchut, I mentioned before, is the lowest of the divine energies, the lowest of the Sefirot, the lowest of the seven emotive divine energies. Malchut means kingship or rulership. It connotes the idea of power and rulership, etc. But Malchut is a feminine energy. It's not a masculine energy. Hold on 1 second. Malchut is a feminine energy. It's not a masculine energy. Malchut is the feminine energy of rulership or leadership. Now, let's continue. Initially, her name was Sarai. Sarah's original name was Sarai, with a yud at the end instead of a hey. Sarai. It's only later that her name was changed to Sarah. So Sarai means my princess. If Sar means princess or ruler or officer, minister, somebody of rulership, Sarai, with the possessive yud in Hebrew, grammatically speaking, means Sarai means my princess, indicating it's not Abraham's princess, but the divine princess that is relegated to the spiritual realms. In other words, indicating Malchut's lack of extension to the lower realms. Let me explain. Imagine we're looking from the top down. Imagine we're all standing in the spiritual realms and we're looking down at the earth below. And even though it's not physically higher or lower, but this will help us because we do exist in space and time. So we can't think of we can't really coherently think in terms that transcend time and space. So might as well use it to our advantage. So imagine you are above the clouds, so to speak. Imagine you are looking at existence as creation at the universe from above to below. The lowest dimension of the spiritual realms is Malchut. Malchut is all the way at the end. You have spiritual realm, spiritual energy, spiritual force, one after the next, higher, lower, 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 lower. The lowest is Malchut. The lowest is Malchut, which is this feminine, powerful rulership energy. Initially, Malchut is Sarai, my princess. In other words, Sarai is Malchut, is this divine force of leadership and rulership, but it exists for the spiritual realms and not for anything beneath itself. In other words, it's my God says, or the spiritual realities say, it's my Malchut, it's my princess, and not, it doesn't go down to create, to give life to the world. So initially, it is possessive, it's part of the spiritual reality, and Malchut is the lowest, but it's the lowest of this greater spiritual continuum that stands above creation. Let's continue. At some point, this will all make sense. So, hopefully. Subsequently, She was called, 1 second, let's finish. One more line. Subsequently, she was called Sarah, which is the princess or sovereign of the entire world. Your kingship extends over all worlds. So initially, Malchut exists solely and exclusively part of the spiritual reality. At a certain point in time, Malchut descends to give life to the worlds below itself. And that is Malchut, as it now becomes the source of creation and Sarai becoming Sarah. Here's a very simple way of understanding this. Parents. So simple way, the most simple way of understanding it. And let's speak in the feminine, because Malchut is a feminine, it's a feminine energy. So might as well just speak in terms of feminine. So before a mother gives birth, so you can't call her a mother. After she gives birth, she's a mother. What's the difference? The difference is the child, right? Before she's a mother, she's not a mother. After she's a mother, she's a mother. So you have almost the way, so you have this potential creative, life creative energy, the way it exists within, versus the way that it exists at actually giving life, right? So two different modes. There's the way it exists for once in within oneself, and then there's the way it exists in actually giving life to someone else. So it's two different modes of this reality. This is true in anything, right? So this is true in, let's say, artistic expression. So there's the way the artistic, your artistic flair exists within yourself, and then there's the way that you share it with others. There's the way that you have the knowledge within yourself, and then there's the way that you share it and give it to others. So Sarai is this divine potential, this incredible leadership, rulership, this incredible potential, the way it exists within the divine head itself, the Godhead, if you will, itself, the spiritual reality is itself. And then there's the way, that's Sarai, my princess. And then there's the way that it extends to actually give life to the worlds, and that is what we call Sarah. Does that make sense? That's why, when did Sarai's name get changed? Right before she gave birth. Right before she was to have a child. God said, Sarai will not have a child, but Sarah will.
Her parents, her family comes from where?
They all came from back there. We don't know. I mean, Abraham's lineage also, we don't know. They came from Orkastim. I don't know. They came from Aram Naharaim, somewhere in Babylonia, somewhere like...
We know Abraham's parents. We don't know.
Yeah, we know Terach. Yeah, we know names. It may be recorded somewhere. I don't know. I don't have on the tip of my tongue the names of our family. It might be recorded somewhere in some Midrash or some other book. We might have some record of her lineage. I just don't know. Hold on. I think we have some reference in Bereishis to her family. 1 second. Let's see. I have a Bible here. Might as well use it. But again, while I'm looking this up, does this core concept make sense? In other words, there's the way that you have, let's say, creative potential. The way it exists within you before you express it. So that you're possessing your own creative expression. And then there's the way that you actually put forth your creative expression and share it with others, and that's how it kind of emanates from you and then can impact others. So you have an idea.
The smoke has to be released.
We're not gonna billow the smoke for this point. We're gonna go soon and bring the smoke in. But there's the way that the energy, this creative energy, exists within the spiritual realm itself, pre-creation. And then there's the way that it flows to actually create. So, again, just spatially, if you think of the spiritual realms as having a top, a middle, and a bottom, so the bottom is Malchut, and the bottom of Malchut is closed up, and it's part of the spiritual reality. It doesn't descend below. At some point, it opens up, and that energy now descends to give the lower dimensions, i.e. the worlds, the created worlds, to give it a life force. So the life force of the worlds, which stand beneath the spiritual realities, get their energy from Malchut as Malchut descends. In other words, Sarah, not Sarai. As it exists in Sarai, it's not giving life to the worlds. As it's Sarai, it's giving life to the worlds. Yes?
So, could one even say that because Sarai has the Yud, that Sarai is actually a higher divine connection than Abraham, because you know they both get the hay later,
right?
But
she's
Sarai
got the yud.
Starts with the yud.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, it depends kabbalistically where everything is holding.
Anyway,
Kabbalah teaches that Malchut, although it's the lowest of the spiritual energies, it's the highest of the spiritual energies, because it's the one that means, number one, rulership and leadership, and number two, it's the creative divine force. And the creative divine force means that it has to have its source in the highest. The lowest is, the quote-unquote lowest, is really the highest. It's the earth that everyone steps on that produces the most wonderful things, right? It produces growth. You put a seed into the earth, and it produces a tree, it produces food, it produces beautiful things. The thing that we all step on. So it's what appears to be the lowest, Kabbalah says all the time, that what appears to be lowest is rooted in really the highest. So Malchut, the energy of Malchut, is the creative divine force that seems to be the lowest, but it's really connected with the highest. So it would make a lot of sense to say that on this level, Sarai, or Sarah even, is rooted in a higher level than Abraham as well. Wherever Abraham, it's not stated here, wherever Abraham is situated, divine continuum, but Malchut anyway is higher than the other energies, even though it's positioned at the end, so to speak. So the Torah says, by the way, about Sarah. No, we don't see it. I don't see it here. Oh, here we go. The name of Nachar's wife.
Who?
Avram and Nachar. So Terach had three sons, Avram, Nachar, and Haran. So Nachar married. So Nachar is Avram's brother. So he married a woman named Milcah. So that was his Abraham's sister-in-law. And they gave birth. Oh no, wait a second. The name of Nachar. This is a complicated family tree. I don't know. Sarai is mentioned here. There's some lineage mentioned here. I gotta decode this, but I'll leave it open. You can have at it soon. I'm sure it's not that complicated to figure out. Yeah, well, it seems like they all came from the same, ultimately the same family. So, yeah, somehow related over here. It looks like in the family tree that we have to, you know, just figure out from the verses. Now, again, so the life force of the worlds comes from the lowest of the spiritual attributes, the lowest of the spiritual dimensions, which is Malchut. Malchut has two modalities to it, as it gives to that which is below it. That's Sarah. And before that, as it exists for itself. And the truth is, probably even after it gives, there's also part of it also retains for itself. It's like a parent, right? So you give to your kids, but you also are your own person. So you're a mother or a father, and you're also your own identity. A teacher shares wisdom and information, but also retains their own information. An artist shares creative works, but also has that creative spirit inside that is for themselves. So Malchut exists on two levels. There are two forms of Malchut. It's almost like Kansas City.
What?
Kansas City. There's Kansas City. I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. There's Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri. Do they border each other?
They're on the river.
So Malchut exists on both sides of the divide. Malchut exists on the side of the spiritual realms, at the bottom, if you will, of the spiritual realms. And then it also crosses over to be the force that gives life past that river divide to the next state over, to the next reality, the physical realities that emanate from the spiritual realities. So you have the spiritual reality, the lowest dimension of Malchut. Malchut exists part of the spiritual dimension, and then it also crosses over and descends into the next world down. By the way, the language of Kabbalah, it says, Ragla Yarda Maves. Her feet descend into death. It's a euphemism, it's a verse, but it euphemistically, according to Kabbalah, refers to Malchut, whose feet, the lowest part of Malchut, descends into the physical reality, which is called death relative to spiritual reality. Spirituality doesn't die, souls don't die, but physical stuff does die. Matter disintegrates, right?
It doesn't disintegrate.
One second. Matter, right, we know the law of conservation of matter, but the point is things in their current form, they can't disintegrate and they can lose their form. So we call it death relative to how we knew it, as opposed to spirit that never really changes its form. So the point is that Malchut descends, part of Malchut descends into this realm of death, into our physical reality to give it life. All of this should tell us one, all of this is intended to tell us one simple point. What is Sarah? Sarah, Kabbalistically, you hear the word Sarah. Sarah is Malchut, as descending into the worlds to give it life. But this is a basic level of divine life, basic level of spiritual energy, single digits from the emotive divine powers, single digits, basic divine life. It quotes at the end of this one, too, third paragraph on page 40, a verse from the Ashrei prayer, Psalm 145. Malchuscha Malchus kol olamim. Your Malchus, your kingship, is the kingship over all worlds. Your Malchus, referring Kabbalistically to the attribute of Malchus, your Malchus is also the Malchus of all the worlds. In other words, there's two dimensions of Malchus. That's why it says Malchus twice. There's your Malchus, and then there's as Malchus, Malchut, right? Your Malchut, and then there's as your Malchut descends into the worlds to give them life. Here we go, let's continue. This occurs, last paragraph from 40, this occurs when Malchut descends to the worlds, the physical created worlds of Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. These are three worlds of creation, to give them energy as indicated in the passage, blessed be the name of the glory of His kingship forever. This is the line that we say in the Shema.
Right.
The second line of the Shema, we actually say quietly, we whisper it. It's a phrase that Moses heard when he went up on high. He heard the angels praising God with this language, and so we use it, but we keep it on the down low so that the angels don't get too jealous that we took their prayer formula. So, what is Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuto L'Olam Va'ed? It means blessed be the name of the glory of His kingship forever. So, what does that mean? So he explains after the colon right there on the bottom of page 40. The word bracha, blessing, connotes the elicitation of the name of the glory of His kingship to the lower realms. Baruch, the Hebrew word for bless, baruch, bracha, baruch, is not just blessing, but it means to draw down, to elicit, to draw down something, or to transfer from one place to another. In the language of Jewish law, there's a phrase that means that says hamavrich et hagefen. When you take a vine and you bend it down, so I think this should work at this point. This is a little bit. Oh, look at that, it's not working. So when you're planting, you can take the top and put it back down into the ground. Now, why would you do that? I don't know, because I'm not a farmer. But they, yeah. So there's reasons to do that. So they take the top and they bring it back down into the ground.
Gives it an additional set of roots.
That's called hamavrich hazagefen. When you take the vine and you put it back down, hamavrich means you bring it back down. You move it from one space to another space. What is a bracha? A bracha is not just thanking God for something that we're doing. Oh, thank God for the food. Thank God for this. It's not just a blessing where we bless God. What does it mean to bless God anyway? God needs our blessings. It's like, God bless you. I am God. Like, what are you? For others, we say, God bless you. What are you saying to God? Blessed are you? Are you giving God a blessing? God needs your blessings. God's like, oh, thank God for the blessing. Like, what's going on over here? Kabbalah says, what is a blessing? What is a bracha? A bracha is not just, we're not blessing God. We're actually bringing forth from God down here below. So when we say Baruch Shem, sorry for saying this too loud, Baruch Shem, Kavod Malchuto, Malchut, Le'olam Va'ed, what we're saying is, may Malchut be drawn down from above to below into our world. That is the basic level of divine energy. It's the level of Malchut that infuses the worlds with life. Let's keep on going, and this is a beautiful idea. This extension of Malchut into our realities is also implied by the letter He added to Sarah's name. For the letter He is wider and longer than the Yud previously in her name. This is symbolic of Malchut's extension. In other words, Sarai is as the spiritual reality is within the spiritual realm. Sarah is as it extends beyond the river into Missouri, right? Beyond the river into beyond, to the worlds of Briah, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. Crossing the spiritual divide into the unknown, that's what Sarah is. Why? Why the letters Yud and He? So the He, the second form of Sarah as it descends, the He is broad and long. In other words, it's a full size letter, as opposed to the original Yud, which is the smallest of letters. Yud is almost like a dot. You make a dot, it's a Yud. It could look like a Yud. A He is this and this. It's got expansion. So the Yud is contraction. The He is expansion. So think about it in human terms. The Yud represents the power that we have that is contracted within us. Sarai is this Malchut energy, the way it's contracted within the spiritual realms for itself. Sarah is as it finds expansion in the lower realms, as it's expanding out into the unknown, into other realities. So again, very simply, our created realities, we're on the lower side of this, right? If this is the spiritual reality, let's just do this right here. Right, if this upper reality is the spiritual reality and we're the physical reality, so this is where we are. What trickles down from here? The lowest dimension, Malchut, which we said is really the highest, but it's situated at the lowest. And of this, it's not the whole thing. It's the lowest part of the lowest. It's only the part of Malchut that descends into this world to give it life. It's not even the original Malchut. In other words, the original is still for itself. It's still for the spiritual reality. It's only the lowest part of Malchut. It's Sarai becoming Sarah that drips, if you will, that gives a steady drip of IV to keep our world flowing and breathing. Yes? Drink from this candle.
I relate to things from a scientific, mathematical point of view. So I'm always trying to translate what you're saying into another form of symbolism, okay? And a lot of what you say makes sense to me. And I look at what you just said. The first one, the Yud, okay, is just a little dot. And the second one, Hey, is a vector. You know what a vector is, right, in physics? It gives direction. And a vector could be in any direction. In this case, it's pointing down towards Earth. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah.
So that's how I relate.
So you have exactly. You have point versus expansion, 100%. That's exactly. It lines up 100%. Yeah.
Is there anything to and from both are in Havaya, but both letters? So, but Hey comes first.
We're talking about, so it's interesting, in the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, in the four-letter name of God, this is the last Hey. The upper Hey is Bina. So the top, the Yud is Chachma, Hey is Bina, Vav is the six Midot, six higher emotional attributes, and the Hey is Malchut, the last Hey. So it's still part of this continuum. If you wanted to really draw it like this, you could draw Yud, and then Hey, and then a Vav, and then a Hey, and that would be really this continuum. It's the lowest Hey, but within the Hey, it's the lowest part of the Hey that's going down into Biyat to give it life. So now that's what typically gives life to the worlds. But here's the whole point, and this is really the big idea. The Torah doesn't say Sarah was 127. It says Sarah's life, Chaye Sarah, was 127. What is Chaye Sarah? Here we go. Third paragraph, 42. Now, while Sarah corresponds to Malchut, and again the lower part of Malchut that makes the Schlepp to give life to lowly physical existences, and it departs from its spiritual stature to have to give life to something way lower than itself. That's what Sarah is. Now, that while that's what Sarah is Malchut, the life of Sarah, that was 100 years, corresponds to the level of 100 and is associated with the 100 blessings one is to recite each day. Let me explain. The basic flow of life to the worlds is from the single digit Malchut and the lowest part of Malchut. That's what goes into the worlds. But there's a way to get triple digits, something higher. There's a way to infuse our world, our physical universe, with a higher energy, with a more intense divine energy. With not single digits, not even double digits. But if you act now, you can get triple digits right now into the world. You can get 100. How do you get 100? Not 1, not 10, but 100. That is through tefillah, through prayer. Through reciting the 100 blessings each day. If you open up the prayer book in the morning, you see we thank God, we bless God, and this is kind of thanking God and drawing these blessings to us as well, like I explained before. We're thanking God the fact that we can see, that we can hear, that we can stand up, that we can walk around, that we have clothes to wear, etc. All of these things we bless God, we thank God for, and these are part of the blessings. Every time we eat, we recite a blessing. So a blessing, a bracha, is a form of prayer. And what is that? What are we doing when we pray, when we bless God? What we're saying is we recognize that the physical world is not just self-contained, but is actually coming from something higher than itself, has a spiritual source. And we're thanking God for giving us this life. Now, when a person does that, that's an accomplishment. For God to allow some of His spiritual reality to drip into the world, that's fine. That God can pull off. But for a human being of flesh and blood to recognize that there's something that exists above the here and now, that's something magnificent. Right? That's something of an accomplishment. That's a human being saying, I don't think that it's only this, the here and now is all that exists, and that's all that I can strive to, but I know that there's something higher. That's an accomplishment. That's what we call a chiddush. That's something new. That's a novelty. So what does that mean? This is like the fire. When a person prays, when a person davens, when a person says a bracha, a blessing, what they're doing is they're lighting their soul. Their soul is always lit, but they're lighting themselves, if you will. They're lighting their body, their animal soul, on fire. And that produces, even though it's still lit now, that produces smoke. And the smoke goes above, and it triggers a light to come back down below. But which light? Not single digits, not double digits, but the triple digits. It goes all the way up, three levels, to trigger a higher divine light, which then comes back down and lights the world back up, like we did with the smoke experiment before. It lights up the world. It lights up our creator reality with a higher, more intense dimension of spiritual light. So, if we do nothing, if we don't do anything, no spiritual work at all, we will still exist. There will be a basic flow of energy from Malchut, Sarah. If we pray, and prayer means that a person says things are not as they appear, and there's something greater to this, and a person, in a sense, transcends their own ego and thanks God for giving us what we have. Again, it's a transcendence of ego. So consuming, burning one's own ego, when a person is able to do that, that reaches a higher space in the spiritual reality, which triggers the divine light to come back down through, if you will, through the smoke.
It's a faucet.
It's a faucet. You open it up. But now you're reaching on a higher level. So let's keep on going inside. Look what it says here. Thus our sages said, do not read ma, which is what? Rather, mea 100. This is a phrase, this comes from a teaching based on a verse from Deuteronomy where Moses says to the people, Moshe says to the Jewish people, what does God ask from you? Just do it. What does He ask from you already? It's like a rhetorical question. What does God want already? It's not such a big deal. But our sages say, don't read it as what and as a rhetorical question, but rather as a statement. What, or you can read it both. What does God want from you? Ma, he wants mea. If you add a hey, an aleph between the letters mem and hey, that form the word ma, which means what in Hebrew. Ma with a hey with an aleph in the middle spells the word mea, which now means 100. Mea is 100. So what that means is, so he explains now this mystically. For ma, so one second before we get to the mystical part. So on a basic level, our sages say, what does God want? He wants your 100. What's the 100? The 100 blessings each day. A person should thank God 100 times each day through the prayers, through the blessings over food and whatever it is, through the before blessings, the after blessings, and all the Amida blessings. All together, we're supposed to get in 100 blessings each day. It's a good thing for good health and good energy. So that we learn, the Talmud learns, our sages learn, from the word ma. Don't read it ma, read it mea, and what it's telling us is to have 100 blessings each day. Comes Kabbalah steps in and adds another dimension to this. So look what it says. For ma refers to malchut. Getting back to Sarai Sarah, right? Ma is malchut, the lowest of the spiritual realms. As the Zohar explains, So it says in the Zohar that ma is a reference to malchut. Thus the verse states how ma, mighty is your name throughout the earth. So name also, the Hebrew word shame, not the English word shame, but the Hebrew word shame, which means name, name is a reference and is a euphemism for malchut as well. So it says, ma adir shimcha b'chalaretz, how mighty is your name throughout the earth. Ma is malchut. It's all ma and shame. It's all malchut. Indicating that God's name, i.e. malchut, the source of vitality of the worlds, including this lowly world in the form of Malik al-Amin, is identified as ma. So again, ma is malchut. That's all you need to know. Ma equals malchut. And let's continue last paragraph. This explains the teaching. Do not read ma, rather mea. Don't read it as what, but rather 100. What does that mean? Don't get malchut, which is the lowest. Get mea, which is 100. Reciting 100 blessings each day stimulates the 100 elicitations and blessings from soviv kol almin into mamalik kol almin. In other words, if you do nothing, if we do no divine service, there will automatically be a drip from this faucet, from malchut, from the lowest dimension, into our world, and that's ma. But if we do mea, if we pray to God, and if we bless God, etc., like I explained before, and we recite the 100 blessings, then we go up, not only to single digits, but to double digits, to triple digits, to the level of 100. This is the spiritual dimension. So through our 100 physical blessings, we reach the level, the spiritual level of 100, and draw down additional power and vitality and light from there. This corresponds to eliciting the life of Sarah. This is Chaye Sarah. This is not just Sarah, which is Malchut. This is Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah. That means there's an additional vitality into Sarah's essential vitality. This is the 100 suffused into the 1, which then goes into the world. I.e. from the aforementioned concealed and hidden level of 100 to the extent that the radiation of Malchut will reach the lower worlds. And what he's saying basically is, very simply, when we say the blessings, that reaches a higher dimension than typically interfaces with the world. That reaches Mea, 3 digits. And from there, it trickles down into Malchut, which then trickles down into the world. In other words, the interface between the spiritual and the physical is always Malchut. It will always be carried through Malchut. But what is flowing through Malchut? Its own energy of single digits or something higher? When we say these blessings, we draw from the higher dimension, bring it into Malchut, and then it flows into our worlds. Now, let's do 2 more paragraphs, and then we're going to wrap it up. Very quickly, top of 44. While the 100 blessings are able to affect okay, this is really going to be a preview for what we're going to speak about next time. Check this out. This is unbelievable. While the 100 blessings are able to affect the flow into Malchut from the level of 100, as we just explained, right? Through prayer, through, in a sense, leaving one's own physical limitations and recognizing a higher truth, Right? Through that spiritual work, we reach a higher level, the level of 100, and bring that into Malchut, and bring that again into the world through Malchut. So while that happens through prayer, the Torah, Torah and Mitzvot, which is rooted in 10,000, the holy myriads, which we said is 10,000, that elicits divine energy from 10,000, from five digits. The aforementioned level of Chafetz and Ratzin, God's desire and God's will, a level far beyond that of 100. I'm going to explain all this in just a moment. This divine energy can then descend via Malchut into this world and permeate physical things such as a sukkah and tefillin and so on. And this concludes the interpretation of the verse, and he came with some of the holy myriads. And so I'll explain very quickly, and this is really a little bit of an explanation, but also a preview for next week. There's two sorts of divine service. One is prayer, and one is doing a mitzvah. And what he's saying is when we pray, you reach 100. When you do a mitzvah, you reach 10,000. When we pray, we transcend the gravitational pull. We transcend the pull that says, hey, whatever you have is yours. You don't need to thank anybody. It's all yours. That's the gravitational pull of this earth. When we pray and acknowledge God, we're transcending the gravitational pull. And we reach the level that spirit that Kabbalistically is referred to as 100. But when we do a mitzvah, not only do we get to 100, not only do we get to 1,000, we get to 10,000. We reach the highest level, the fifth dimension up. 1, 10. 100, 1,000, 10,000. When we do a mitzvah, we reach 10,000. Why? What is the power of the mitzvah? What is the power of the mitzvah? The power of the mitzvah is not only are we transforming ourselves, we're transforming a physical item. And that's a greater transcendence of gravity.
Aren't you transforming the world?
Yes, that's what I mean. In other words, when we pray, we're refining ourselves. And as low as we might be naturally, so to speak, inside, we still have a soul. We still have, it's still us. We're not that low. But when we take a piece of wood, and we make a sukkah out of it, that is a greater transcend. That breaks physical gravity to a much greater extent than even our prayers. So when we pray, we transcend the gravitational pull of the earth on us. But when we do a mitzvah, we transcend the gravitational pull on stuff of the world itself. You take a candle, this wax candle, this is not something that you would say that anyone would say is holy. This is a very physical thing. But you take the same candle on Friday evening before sunset, and you light it with a physical match, or with one of these guys, and you say a blessing, you're not only refining yourself through prayer and meditation and whatever, that's like a self, you know, that's something within self. You're taking something of the detached physical universe, physical world, and bringing it up to God, and that's a much greater accomplishment, and that reaches much higher. That reaches the dimension of 10,000. And that is a much greater smoke that reaches to an even higher light, and then, as we saw at the beginning of today's class, it brings it straight back down into the world. And so, this is what it means, he says, when Moses says that the Torah emanates, Torah and Mitzvot emanate from the Rivavot Kodesh, from the holy 10,000s. What does that mean? Prayer is not selfish, but prayer is still me having an epiphany. It's still me. So that it's still limited. It's still a little bit, it's not all the way up. When I do a mitzvah, it reaches the highest of the heights. We'll pick this up next week. I hope today made sense. The core things that you should know. Every physical action has a spiritual reaction. So whatever just like in this fire, the smoke that goes up can trigger something to come back down. The water that goes up triggers rain, precipitation that comes back down. So every action has a commensurate and opposite and complementary, right, science as well, has a complementary spiritual reaction. When we do nothing, God gives us a basic flow from Malchut. When we pray, we get a higher level. It goes up to a higher level. It comes back down from a higher level, from the level of 100. And when we do a mitzvah, it goes all the way up to 10,000, hits that light, and brings it back down to us. We'll pick this up next week. Thank you very much for joining me for Kabbalah and coffee.